This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Bob Valvano will join us in about a half an hour. He'll make his debut on the show as well. We'll talk some ACC hoops, a couple of major games this weekend, Virginia Tech, Louisville, and Florida State. And Eric McClinney will be walking through those doors right there about an hour from now.
It's like the old days, you, me, and Bobby V on ESPN Radio.
Is that right?
Yeah. Josh will tell you that was the tag on the show.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Take your word for it.
All right. Now, did you hear what we said going to break?
The most important figure of the ACC all time. I answered it for you. You weren't paying attention.
I was paying attention.
Billy Packer.
I want to throw Billy in there?
Mr. Cash. If it wasn't for Billy, I'm not sitting here. The answer is Billy Packer. There is no show in the basement without Billy Packer. That's right, Fuller. You tell him. You tell him, Fuller. Hey, Fuller, bark once for Billy Packer. There you go. I rest my case.
Sound like he was barking for the commissioners.
I know this much.
What?
He's getting ready to go upstairs here in a minute.
Yeah.
Big boy is.
So who would be classified
The commissioners are not. Oh, I know what it is. Oh, watch this. This is the beauty of live television. This is where our man Robert, behind the scenes, goes on belly, face first, to get the ball. There it is. There we go.
Yeah, perfect.
The commissioners have got to be on the list.
All right. So to me, when this question popped up yesterday, the first name came to mind was Corrigan.
Gene Corrigan.
Yeah. Because he took the ACC and Bob James was the commissioner when the league went to eight. It went eight, seven, back to eight with Georgia Tech, and then nine with Florida State was Corrigan. When Gene Corrigan was able to get Florida State in this league, that changed the football dynamic. Fair?
No question.
Okay.
100% right.
Now, Gene Corrigan also was able to get longer-term impact contracts set up for TV and all sorts of other things, bowl alignments. Now, John Swofford and his group, since he became commissioner in 1997, have taken it to the 21st century of football, the modern football look with all bowl alignments and things like that.
And I would also tell you, even though he would probably disagree with this, I think Commissioner Swofford's detailing of the media rights secured the league, because without it, I'm not sure we're having this conversation.
Well, we're not having it here.
No, that's what I'm saying. It would have been a very different landscape had that not taken place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you remember this past decade, there were all kinds of conversations about certain ACC teams being poached by other leagues.
Sure.
And
absolutely.
I think that was a real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you?
I do. I think there was a time in the early part of the last decade where there was a lot of volatility that never became public.
Totally agree with that.
I think there was a lot of volatility. So to the point that the landscape of this league could have very well changed.
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yeah.
Now, you'll never get anybody on record to say it, but I think there was a real possibility that there were some schools seriously having conversations about, hey, you know what? This could happen.
Right.
That A, B, and C could go to leagues X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other thing, too, when you start thinking about influential figures. In terms of the administration of the league, you lean right away to the commissioners.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to talk about historical landmarks in the conference, I think then you have to look at people like
Everett Case.
I think you have to look at people beyond just the affiliation with the member institutions, like Castleman D. Chesley. Because I think C.D. Chesley changed the Atlantic Coast Conference from being just another league to being a league of viability because of television.
He was cutting edge. He was so far ahead of the curve, it wasn't funny. The ACC had such a built-in advantage because of it. And, you know, he was thinking in the 21st century before we got there.
Right.
And was pulling it off. Yeah. So, yeah, there's no question he's on the short list.
So I think you talk about Chesley from that respect. I think the other thing is, too, that you had to have, and this is going to sound funny in our current society to say this, but I also think the other benefit to the Atlantic Coast Conference was its landscape and footprint allowed the association between the member institutions and the media. We were showing that picture yesterday of the coaches and talking about how the coaches and media used to get together for 3-4 days at Grandfather Mountain in the spring after spring ball and, you know, just kind of get away and everybody get to know each other. It also happened at a time when the media in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Maryland to a degree coincided, and the relationships with ADs and coaches and sports information people allowed this league to go next level in terms of the way it was being, you know, showcased, radio, TV, newspaper. I think that had something to do with it too. You were in bigger markets, Pac, than any other league in the country.
Yeah, true, but I also think it was just a different time. I mean, social media didn't exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just a different way of life and everything else back then.
Yeah.
But I thought that was part of the charm of the conference
mm-hmm.
when it started. And then got into the momentum of television and having success, especially in basketball.
Right.
Because hoops was always the go-to in this conference, long before football became what it is today. But
who's the most important football figure?
Ooh. You know, I would tell you, for where this league is today, the most important football figure, I think, is Bobby Bowden. I'm going to tell you why. Because when Florida State joined the league, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
the conference, you know, Clemson had a run in the 80s. Maryland was really good. North Carolina was really good.
Right.
But when Bobby Bowden and Florida State joined the league, I think it changed it. They gave you, all of a sudden, a national brand, and the way Florida State played was very different. Speed all over the place, and it really forced the ACC to kind of jumpstart and get in the 21st century.
Yeah.
And listen, that run that Bobby Bowden had was unbelievable in terms of great teams, consistent teams. But I think he changed the ACC more than any other coach ever, more than any other administrator ever with football.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it was Bobby Bowden.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think Jerry Claiborne at Maryland changed the product in terms of type players, because Jerry Claiborne, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Jerry Claiborne brought strength training into the SEC football.
Yeah, but you know, while that was going on though, Wes, you know, Nebraska and Oklahoma were awesome. You know, it didn't change the league. It changed Maryland.
Yeah. That's true. Bobby Bowden changed the league.
Bobby Bowden changed the entire dynamic of the way the ACC conducts football business. Because all of a sudden, Clemson, after having the great run in the 80s, North Carolina and Maryland, really good teams in the 80s, had to change and adapt to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the bar and the standard totally changed from those three schools that had success to what Florida State was doing, which was even better. And if you didn't agree to say, hey, we got to go chase those guys, you're going to get lapped.
844-SAY-ACC, and we'll get your thoughts on, you know, maybe if you want to break it apart to football, basketball.
Well, let me ask you this. Yeah. Who's the most important basketball?
Evercase.
Figure? Evercase.
Okay. I think. I mean, he brought the ACC tournament, created the Dixie Classic,
mm-hmm.
which was the forerunner really to, you know.
But isn't it interesting to ask that question, and our answers are so different from a time period? When you talk about a snapshot of the ACC from the start to today, the most important figure you think in hoops goes back to the 50s. The most important figure in football is the 90s.
And I'm going to say this, and for those that don't understand the history of the ACC, had he lived, I think Jim Tatum would have been the most important football figure. Because I think Jim Tatum was going to be that good. And that's my opinion. He had been at Maryland. He had grown up at Oklahoma. Worked for Bud Wilkinson, had come east, was headed to Carolina. He had been very successful at the University of Maryland. I'll tell you another guy, too. God bless him. If Bo Ryan had stayed at NC State and not gone to LSU, not that, you know, would he be alive, neither here nor there, but Bo Ryan was on that trajectory. Bo Ryan was, you talk about guys ahead of their time? Think about how young he was when he went to LSU as the coach. How young he was when he got the NC State job. How good they were. and then he goes to LSU. But I think Everett Case in basketball, Bobby Bowden in football is exactly where this conversation is.
I just think it's interesting, though, that we're four decades apart from the most important
No doubt.
Four decades.
And I think that when this league had its window, they had to realize the window was there. And the window started with the Clemson team in 80, 81. Carolina in 80, Clemson in 81, NC State 79. Those were three really good years of ACC football.
Wait a minute. Don't forget about Maryland. Bobby Ross.
Middle 70s and Bobby Ross in middle 80s.
Great teams. Yeah. And, you know, Bobby Ross also goes on to win a national championship at Georgia Tech.
That's it. I mean, we had really, really good football for a decade. And you think from 79 to 89, 90, when Georgia Tech won it? And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, Florida State's in the league.
Right. That's why I think Bobby Bowden's the answer to the question.
And by the way, don't think that Florida State was very impactful to the ACC, but the league was pretty good. It just got a lot better when Florida State came in the league.
Right. It's kind of the same conversation we're having right now in football, in this league. Clemson is a superstar.
Right.
We need a little bit more depth at the top. And that's why I keep going back to the same old mm-hmm. of the Florida States and the Miamis and the Virginia Tech and anybody else that's in the mood to jump in there and consistently win 9, 10, 11 games if you can pull it off.
Yeah.
That's what's missing right now in the ACC.
All right, we're going to get to your calls. This is a fun topic for a Friday. 844-SAY-ACCM. We look forward to visiting with many of you. And you can go anywhere with this. In your mind, who's the most important figure in ACC history and why? We've given you a couple to think about. And, yeah, Mike Krzyzewski, Dean Smith. Yeah, those go without – very important to their sports and their institutions, certainly. But in terms of changing dynamic, Everett Case brought postseason basketball to the ACC. What Bobby Bowden in Florida State did in football in this league, you can't measure. It may save the league. Is that crazy?
I'm not going to go that far. I think that what John Swofford did last decade saved the league.
Expansion.
No, expansion
and the network
in the media right. The securing of the rights for the media where folks just couldn't say, hey, you know what, if you leave, that's fine, but we got your rights.
Yeah.
When everybody agreed to that, it saved the league from possibly being poached
by a
number of other teams. And there, listen, this league's had a number of teams mm-hmm. that would fit really well into other conferences.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll never know that answer. But I believe that's true.
Yeah.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday, getting ready for the weekend. This time next week, we'll be eventually working our way down to Nawlins, the Big Easy.
We're going?
I can't speak for you. I'm going.
I'll be there Sunday. Showing up Sunday.
You gonna have your Falcon gear on?
Doubt it. Yeah, the heartfelt relationship between Falcons and Saints.
Not too good.
No. By the way, it should be a lot of fun. We're going to cross some wires down there with our brethren on the other channel.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of working out, just like those Ohio State fans said.
Break bread, man.
All the conspiracy theories are kicking right on in.
No. Well, I tell you what. And they are still hurt. The brethren up there in Ohio are still not quite sure about conspiracy. They got more excuses than I've ever heard. Get over it, man.
I got a 70-pound lab hanging out behind me here.
That's right.
Never too early to hype the fight, by the way. That's what Bob Arum and Don King always said, right? So Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence a week from Monday night. Let's just clear off the rest of the field and let those two cats go. Well, this is high-level QB play.
Yes, sir. And this is perhaps a precursor to Sunday football for the next decade.
Mm.
Yep. Again, that's a strong statement given the fact that Joe Burrow is probably going to go to Cincinnati. We may never see him again. But these are two terrific, awesome QBs. And Burrow this year, you look at his numbers, Wes, they almost look like typos. And LSU's offense has been fantastic. They're spectacular. They've got great wide receivers, a tremendous offensive line. Burrow, to his credit, has just had one of those years where it just seems like, you know what, it's clicked. And he gets it. He's smart, knows what to do with the football, incredibly accurate. And Trevor Lawrence, in the last seven or eight games, has been just the same. Just absolutely spectacular. I mean, these are two great quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Burrow's ability to keep plays alive. And I do believe Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady have done a phenomenal job of putting together combination packages in the run game and in the throw game, obviously. Edwards-Helaire, in my mind, is as valuable to them in many respects as ETN is to Clemson.
Yep.
I think Clemson has maybe 1.5 more weapons on the perimeter, but that might be a stretch.
I don't know if I'd even go that far.
I think both offensive lines are pretty good, but these two guys here are the separators, and it's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be fascinating. Lawrence has been so consistent. And now you're talking about a guy that's got a chance to win a second national title in as many tries.
I think the key to the game is going to be Clemson's ability or inability to run the football. Because I think they need to shorten the game a little bit. You don't want to get in a shootout with LSU. You don't want to play to their strengths. Not that Clemson can't score, because, yeah, they can. But I think Clemson's defense is better than LSU's. And that's what you want to keep it to, right? You want your best unit on the field to take care of business.
Yeah.
And I think the easiest way to make sure Joe Burrow and his frisbee-catching dogs don't score is to make sure they're on the sideline.
Yeah.
Long drives, eat up time, get ETN off and running, and do your thing. It's got the potential of being an unbelievable championship game. I mean, these are just, 14-0. It's been a magical, I've said this before, it's the only easiest way for me to say it. It's been a magical year for LSU. It's been a magical run for Clemson.
Yep.
And regardless of whoever wins this thing in the Superdome, is going to be an incredible story, Wes, because if it's LSU and they go 15-0, they become the first SEC team to do that. They will have beaten 7 AP top 10 teams, which has never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And the flip side is, if Clemson wins, first time ever in the college football playoff, somebody's gone back to back. Clemson now wins 3 out of 4, becomes one of 4 teams to be able to pull that off, and 30-0.
Right.
And like 30-0, and like, where do you think it ends 30-0? Right?
Yeah.
So, regardless, these are two great football teams. The environment will be nuts. It'll be an LSU home game. But I told you earlier, I think if you're Clemson, if you're a great team, you love going on the road, man.
Yep.
You relish the opportunity to go, oh, cool. They're going to be all screaming against us? Great. Watch this.
Yeah.
Can't wait. It's going to be great.
Jay in North Carolina at 844-SAY-ACCN. Hi, Jay. Hello, Jay.
No, Jay.
Yes. I'm
going to say no. Oh, there we go. Hi, Jay. Hey, how are you?
Hey, Jay. What's up?
Oh, fine. I had to ask a question about who is the greatest influence on the ACC, mine, especially with basketball. But I have to say it's Dean Smith, because not only did he raise the level of the whole college, but he also, even though Charles Scott wasn't the first black, he was the first black superstar. And after him, that's how the ACC was able to get a lot of the top black players in the whole country.
Yeah, so to me, from a society perspective, you're right. Yeah. There's no doubt from a society perspective, he did integrate public universities in terms of college athletics. NC State and North Carolina were at the front end of that. Maryland also, PAC, as Barry Jacobs has outlined. And by the way, if you like reading about the history of college basketball, thank you for the call, Jay. Barry Jacobs, longtime writer in this state, has outlined the players that broke the color barrier at ACC and SEC schools. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal read. And I think anybody that wants to read about that time period in college basketball would find it to be fascinating. It's really, really a good book.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Dean Smith's accomplishments on the court we know about. But like you said, his impact on society, and he meant it too. It wasn't just lip service.
No.
Was equally impressive. And when you try to answer this question, listen, you can go a lot of different ways with this, but he would have to be on your short list.
Oh,
has
no question.
To be on the short list.
Absolutely. More calls on this. Mac in North Carolina. Hi, Mac.
Hello, guys. How are you this morning?
Fine, thanks.
I would say I want to go to the administrative side and say that the most important person in the last few years for ACC is John Swofford. And the reason I say that is because he was doing two things. He saved the conference from being eaten up by other possibility of other conferences with rumors spreading around as early as 2011. And I think with the expansion that he did in up to 15 teams, it's made the ACC a much more consistent competitive basketball conference, because if you remember in the mid-2000s, Duke and Carolina were so dominant that the ACC was only getting about three or four bids a year. And I think with the expansion, it's certainly done a much better job in expanding the footprint.
Yeah, there's no argument about the volatility of college athletics landscape in the early part of the last decade, the 2010s, and it lasted about 3.5 years, and John Swofford was able to kind of keep the waters calm. And, look, there was a lot of stuff out there. I mean, a lot of stuff. And we were within days of stuff potentially happening, because the volatility of certain leagues was really in play, from the SEC to the Big 12 to the Pac-12, the rumors of Texas going to the Pac-12, remember that?
And OU.
And Oklahoma.
Then Baylor said, hey, man, wait a minute now.
Yeah.
How about us?
And then, you had state politics being involved. There's no doubt John Swofford had to use all of his diplomacy to keep things in order in the ACC, and he did a marvelous job. In fact, that and what Pack mentioned a moment ago, the media rights negotiation, I think will be his legacy. I think that and the collaborative nature of all the institutions, and we were fortunate last June to be able to do our SiriusXM radio show with him. The collaborative nature of the Atlantic Coast Conference from the conference office in Greensboro with all 15 institutions is really one of the most impressive things that I got from our visit, and how constant that collaboration occurs, and we see it play out. We've been to the last two spring meetings. I think there's some understanding about how all the, look, basketball games at the start of the season, conference games, that doesn't happen unless you got collaborative relationship. And I think he's done a marvelous job in that diplomacy as well.
And let's not sell ourselves short. The creation of ACC Network is also in his watch.
He gave Fuller a chance to become a television star.
Wherever you want to go on out when you can.
Right.
But, what other network has dogs and stars?
Joel in North Carolina has a thought on this topic. Hi, Joel.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
To me, growing up, I'm 50, just turned 50. It was, for TV, Thacker and Packer. When you see Jim Thacker and Billy Packer, you just knew, it's a good ball coming, But I think you two, just like what you just said, that you're filling in their spot right there. I mean, I'm off today. It's raining. And I get to listen to a lot of good ACC talk. So I think you guys, the media standpoint, that you guys fit right in there for me, man.
All right. That's very kind of you. Thanks.
Wes, up over your head on the top shelf.
Which one you want there, Coach?
It's right there.
With Chesley?
Yep.
All right.
It's Jim Thacker, Billy Packer, C.D. Chesley, Bones McKinney.
Biana, sorry. Camera 2. There they are. There are the boys.
There's a shot right there of what that dude was just talking about.
Jim's got some good-looking hair, man.
Jim Thacker, Billy Packer, Bones McKinney, and they're talking to C.D. Chesley.
Castleman, Detali, Chesley. That's who we were talking about earlier in the show.
So there you go. There it is. ACC right there.
Bones. Good to see Bones now.
Man, he was a legend, wasn't he? He was awesome.
One day I got to get the story right. We're going to tell some Bones McKinney stories in the offseason. We're going to get Billy in here. When's Billy coming to the basement?
Probably February.
Think
for for his birthday. It'll be our birthday gift to Billy. Opportunity for him to come in and entertain the masses.
By the way, I was asked about it. The Barry Jacobs book about the integration of college basketball It's called Across the Line. You can find it on Amazon and places. It's phenomenal.
It really is great.
He did an unbelievable job putting that book together.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Now making his debut on the program.
First of many appearances, I figure.
Well, we're going to find out if he passes the audition first. Bob, good morning. How are you?
Jeez. Wow, now I'm all nervous. Now I can't even put a sentence together. I didn't know that.
You know what? You'll fit right in with us then.
Dude, this is awesome. I got to tell you that I've sent our producer, Drew Brooks, and the ever popular Josh Macri. We have them combing the archives for the You, Me, and Bobby V jingle, and they can't find it.
Oh, you're kidding me. Now I'm actually a little hurt. I would think that would be like in the museum arm of ESPN Radio up there somewhere.
You know, Bob, at this point in time, you know, there's a guy that once said, you should laugh every day, you should cry every day. We've done this in the first 30 seconds of the interview with you.
Well, as long as we put a little more emphasis on the laughing here, the crying, they don't ask you back when you come on and make people laugh. So, thinking? Let's make people think about this matchup. This should be a good game.
Well, and you got Louisville, Florida State. Bob is the analyst with the great Paul Rogers on Louisville's radio broadcast, but also sees a lot of college basketball. Take us through the cards here, because the Texas Tech game and the UK game, did they throw up red flags for Chris Mack?
They're not a perfect team, there's nobody that's a perfect team out there, literally. I mean, you look around the country and everybody's got their share of Achilles heels. This is not a team that gets great guard play. Their guards have to be good for them to win like any other team, but they don't have any dominant All-American types back there. They also are not a kind of team that is going to force you into a lot of turnovers. I mean, he's committed to the pack line defense, and that's been a problem. In fact, even though they're 2-0 in the conference, if you look at their stats, they've made more turnovers in those two conference wins than they've created for the opponent. And this Florida State team will turn you over. I mean, they average an 18 turnovers created a game. So you look at that, that's a little bit of a problem. And then you touched on it. The best teams, they haven't always had their best players step up. I don't know, Jordan Wara, who is a terrific, terrific player, but he was on vacation against Kentucky. I don't know what happened there. I mean, it wasn't like he missed shots. He didn't even get shots. He was just, there were long stretches where he weren't even sure he was in the game. He's not a great player without the ball. That's the single weakest part, I think, of his game. He can create his shot a little bit. He's got good size. He's a good rebounder. He can take it to the basket. We all know what a good shooter he is, but he'll make one cut, and if he's not open, he stops. And, you know, that the great players, you know how well they're going to be defended. You got to make a second cut and set a screen and, you know, go use it, make a curl, make a fade, do something, make yourself hard to guard. I think that's something he's got to get better at.
Bob, here we go with Florida State again, right? You know, Leonard Hamilton, waves of players and athletes, they defend, they'll get after you, they can score as well. But you know what? It's amazing that Florida State never seems to receive the national credit. They have a chance to make a statement this weekend.
He's the most underappreciated coach in the country. He really is. I mean, every time you do one of their games, you know, you look at another stat as you're preparing and you go, wow, that's right, I forgot. I mean, you know this. I mean, there's only six coaches who've won 150 conference games. He's the sixth guy to do it. They were the winningest program for a decade behind Duke and Carolina. So it wasn't like he had a couple of good years. They've been consistently good. They're usually a very good defensive team, and they put a lot of pressure on you. They're big enough to invade some small foreign countries. I mean, they're gigantic. I mean, they've got size coming from every position. And, you know, and as my brother used to say, he's running guys in and out of the game like he's paying off on campaign promises. I mean, the dog like that. Good. That's got it. A good response.
That's a good start.
Yeah, that's a good start. Yeah, you're on your way to the next visit with the dog barking. Here's the other thing, too, that gets you about Florida State. They have the makeup, and I said this to Pack in the first hour as Bob Valvano joins us. Bob, I look at this Florida State team, and I see the characteristics of the team that won the ACC title with Michael Snair and that group. I see a group of guys, and there's no clear-cut go-get-it guy. They're a bunch of clear-cut go-get-it guys, and they got to be hard to prepare for if I'm Chris McNamara.
You just absolutely hit it on the head. That is, not only are they tough to prepare for, because, you know, if you got that one great player, I mean, like, quite honestly, Kentucky put their game plan together around Jordan Wara and took him out of the game and really made it hard for Louisville. You can't do that with this team, because if you take one guy out, they get another guy who can step up and score. And I think that serves them well, like in an ACC tournament setting, because, mm-hmm. you know, you got all those games in such a small window. And if a guy has an off night, all it takes is one day where he's not on his game and you're going home. Well, they don't have that problem, because as you said, if in the quarterfinal round, one guy's off, well, somebody else steps up. And then the semifinal round, another player can step up. And it's not like those guys aren't talented. It's just, they don't run their stuff through one guy. I mean, even though, you know, Vassell's turned into a really, really good player, and you've had him so many times, I'm sure, but I've had their games. I've had him have some really good games. Yeah. I guess the ACC tournament last year, didn't he have four threes in one of the games? I think it was. I remember doing that game. So, I mean, he can step up when the stage gets big, but you're right. They're not relying on one guy, and that's – now, the advantage for Chris is, though, they don't play their defense that way anyway. I mean, if you talk to him, he is, you know, he's a pack line guy, another one of those pack line guys. And I never played the pack line. I never coached it. So it's just all from, you know, doing Tony's games that I've really learned about it. And Chris does it a little differently. They don't double the post the same way Virginia does. But by and large, they don't really skew their game plan around one guy. I mean, they certainly will tweak it a little bit, but they believe you stay in position, and you're willing to do that for the whole 30 seconds. You go hard to the defensive glass, and good things will happen. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be. And the one other thing to point out real quick, as you guys know, because I know you look at the stats like I do, Louisville's playing, which I don't think Chris is happy with, at a very slow pace. They're 300th in the country in tempo. Ooh. And Florida State can run and likes to run. And that's going to be interesting to see if Florida State can make this game go a little bit faster, perhaps, than Louisville wants to.
Bob, let me add this real quick. It's January, but does this feel like kind of a milepost game for both these schools? The winner kind of stays in the thick of it. I mean, I know we got 20 games and we're early, but God, this just has a little bit bigger feel to it than maybe even the six other games, except although Pac's on Virginia Tech, Virginia tomorrow, and I think for good reason. But this Louisville Florida State game, feels like it might have a little more to it.
Well, I think it does for different reasons. I mean, Florida State, after that terrible Indiana game, has got a 5-game winning streak. They're coming in sky high. If you can win a road game in the conference against a top 10 team, that's a huge, huge statement for that you're in it for the long haul. So, yes, they have a great opportunity. Louisville's a little different. There's a little tiny bit of heat on them right now because, you know, that they kind of pay attention to that Kentucky game in this part of the country. And, the folks were not thrilled with the fact that they really, for the first two-thirds of that game, really, really struggled. They didn't play well at all. And, you know, this game is a chance to get back on track against a legitimately good team, a team that's ranked and been ranked and probably will be ranked as the season goes on. And if they stumble again, and then the other thing is, you know, they play this will be two of their first three conference games at home. There's a stretch coming up here where they're going to play 5 of 7 on the road. So you better load up while you're at home here. So there's a little bit of pressure, I think, on Louisville. It's an opportunity game for Florida State, and I think a little bit of pressure on the Ville here in this one.
Bob, you were talking about slow pace in the pack line. I want to get you to Virginia and Virginia Tech, because the Hokies have been a pleasant surprise based on preseason expectations, and they can light it up when they're hot from beyond the arc. Virginia continues to struggle finding additional players who can score. You know they're going to play great D. But if you had the crystal ball, Virginia Tech in Virginia, what do you think happens this weekend?
Where is that game?
It's in Charlottesville.
I would never in a million years pick against Virginia in Charlottesville. I mean, I'm not a masochist. They're still great defensively. You know, that is, they're still, I think, first in Ken Pom's adjusted defensive ratings. I think that's right. They're not nearly what they've been. Of course, when you're the national champion, there's going to be some backsliding. But I think that's a tall task. And even though, as you said, Virginia Tech's been a very surprising team, and an explosive at times offensive team. All those things go out the window when you play Virginia there. I mean, they just do. I've seen so many teams go in there on a high, averaging 75, 80 points, and they're breaking their back to get to 50. So you know that. You've seen so many games there yourself. So if I'm a betting man, I'm taking Virginia. But you're right. Tech is one of the good surprise stories in the league, no question.
All right, Bob, you said this, and nationally I think we're trying to not panic here that there's not this great dominant team, right? I mean, we're a month or two months now into the college basketball season, and we don't want to hit the big button yet. We don't want to say, oh, wait a second, there's no great team, and we don't want to anoint a team nationally. But two of the real interesting stories, I think, are the struggle of Carolina, especially since the injury to Anthony. It's a little more pronounced, perhaps. And then also what's happened at Syracuse. Do you see a light ahead for either one of those? Obviously, if Anthony gets back, that certainly helps Carolina. But give me a take on those two, and is this just, you know, one of those cyclical things in college basketball?
Well, there's a lot there, honestly, because if you're right. I mean, if you look, we're looking for that great team, and I don't think it's going to emerge. I don't think there is a great team. I think it's going to be one of those years where you can see a mid-major or make a deep, deep run in the NCAA tournament. There's going to be some sort of a breakthrough team. You know, remember when South Carolina got there a few years ago, you know, that kind of stuff. I think it's prime for that again. I really do. The ACC is very competitive, as it always is and always will be. But, I mean, if you look at the rankings, you know, they're not the usual suspects, as you say. And so, Syracuse and Carolina, you know, if I were to say one of those two teams, I think Syracuse is in more trouble. They don't score. I'm trying to find a way to say, boy, why will they get it on the right track? But he's done that so many times. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've said that about Coach Boeheim's teams a couple of other years where I look at it and say, boy, this is the year they really come crashing back to earth. And then they put a great run together. If Carolina, you're right. I mean, Anthony comes back, they're not going to be great, but he's a huge difference maker. So I would feel that they would have a chance if they can get him back in the lineup. But now it's my dog barking here, by the way. So, you know, he wants to get on the show also. Come on, Simon, get in here.
There you go.
So, there we go. Very nice. We're having a conversation. Can we get in on this? Yeah, so I do. No, I think they're both in some trouble. I don't think it's going to be a quick fix. I think Syracuse is very susceptible, but as I said, those two guys, you don't win the number of games they both have won with oatmeal for brains. So they'll try and figure something out. But I'm not usually optimistic about either one of them. No.
Real quickly, you think Duke's the best team right now today?
I think even though they beat Kansas, I really like Kansas. I thought Kansas, when I was up at the Champions Classic, was the best team. And that was a great game, a one-possession game, as you guys know. Nobody likes to hear that as a fan, but it ultimately comes down to luck. I mean, it really does. One-possession games, you can roll the dice. So Kansas could have just as easily won that game. But I think they're 1-2 right now. Yeah, I think they are. I think they're both. I think they're the real deal. I left New York thinking those two are the two best teams there, and by a pretty good margin, to be honest with you. Michigan State came in with such high expectations, but I still haven't really been dazzled by them. And Kentucky their shooting is so inconsistent. It's just going to be hard to imagine that they can put a deep run together for six games. Gonzaga's schedule is so challenging. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, it's so challenging in the sense that it's so hard to gauge how good they are because I looked at it today. They were 214th most difficult schedule to this point in the year. So they're good. They're really good, but I don't know how you gauge that. So, yes, there was a long answer to a short question. I think Duke and Kansas are 1-2, and I think it's by us right now, at least, an appreciable margin.
All right. A-plus work, Valvano. A-plus work.
Ooh, and as John Lennon said at the top of the building in the Let It Be album, and I thank you on behalf of the band, and I hope we pass the audition.
There you go. You and the dog.
You and the dog, yep. There you go.
Hey, Bob. They want us back. Yay. Yeah.
There you go. Hey, tell Paul hello. Thanks. Have a great show tomorrow. Appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate it. You guys, too. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Bob Valvano, ESPN Radio, college basketball analyst, also part of the Louisville broadcast. I know Fuller, his dog's barking, too.
You know what it is? I have a theory of why Fuller's going crazy.
Why is he going crazy?
Because I think he sees the, you know what, over your shoulder on about the third up there. Yeah, but don't take it out because all the basketballs are coming down.
Do you see? I don't know if Bianca can put this as... This is what we have to do when we work with live animals right there.
That's it.
Yeah, there they are.
Yep.
right there beside my Apex.
You're not getting any. You're not going to get any.
Right there. There it is. Yeah. Chester and Fuller, and he sees it.
Loaded with treats, and I think he saw it.
Is that what happens? Yeah. Look at that. Right there on the shelves, kids.
Yeah.
There you have it.
All right. We better read this promo here.
Yeah, we're going to read this promo to remind you that Sunday nights, I know Fuller, are very big on ACC Network. Why? Because of nothing but net. 6 o'clock Eastern this week, a full review and preview of the week in basketball, plus insight, analysis, and more. Kelsey Riggs, Luke Hancock, Dallin Cuff, Monica McNutt, and Carlos Boozer.
Packer and Durham.
There's Crispy. And then there's Crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
West Virginia game is the game that I'm probably most famous for in Syracuse because it was a last second two-point conversion that preserved the undefeated season, and we had to drive the length of the field to get the touchdown and the 2 points. And people remember that as being one of the greatest finishes in history of the Carrier Dome. It was the worst football game I played in my entire life, bar none. I never played that bad in Sandlot. I'll play, the pole-to-pole game you play in the street. I threw four interceptions. I fumbled twice. I was horrible. The fact that we still won that game despite my play is really the true miracle.
McPherson back. They pick up the blitz to the end zone. Killing. Yes! Yes! Touchdown! They are going for the two-point conversion and a chance at continuing the undefeated, untied season. McPherson running the option. Pitching it back. He's yes! in! Yes! He's in! Yes!
You know, Wes, it's funny watching that video. I still love the old teams that played the option game.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, the old option football. When it's executed, man, it is so pure.
Can I ask a question? Pure. I don't know if I can get Josh and Drew on this or not. How many of those are there, of those 150 My Stories? Just curious. I mean
there are 150.
Know? Really? Seriously?
Yeah. Seriously. Does that surprise you, Wes?
Well, I know how many interviews they did. I mean, because they had a moment of weakness and had me do one.
Hey, Wes.
Pack did one, yeah.
Who's buried in Grant's tomb?
it's pick on Wes Durham Day.
It is.
I'll tell you what, Durham's in here for like a bonus Friday, and you guys are going to town, aren't you?
You keep this up, Wes is going to make sure, game or no game, there is no Wes Durham on Friday.
I can sit on the back deck in Cartersville with Clifford and watch the sunrise if I need to. I would love, I don't know if we can do this. You guys would have to tell me, because we're kind of new to the program here, as they say, right, Pack?
No, speak for yourself.
91 shows in, we're still new to the program. Is it possible that we might be able to build a segment of Packer and Durham one day and run like some ACC-centric 150s? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we honestly try to run all the good ACC ones. I think that was only the third one that we ran.
We've run some good ones. They've been fun.
But, yeah, we could definitely do that.
I know that, and I don't know that off the grid of the 150 story, are there some ACC, because I know the time they did mine, they interviewed like, we've run Mac Brown. I think we ran Matt Garvey from the Chick-fil-A Bowl talking about Julius Peppers falling asleep. We've run Don McPherson. I know they interviewed several coaches at a Chick-fil-A event a couple springs ago when they were starting this 150. That whole thing, by the way.
There's a good one coming up next week, by the way, guys. I'm not busting your chops. There's a really good one coming up next week.
There you have it. I think those things are cool. And the 150 stuff available on the ESPN app is phenomenal. I watched some of it over the weekend.
I'm with you. They're great.
Just thought I'd add that. By the way.
Well, hold on a second. What was your 150? What was your story? Apparently we're not going to see ours. So what was yours?
As I recall, the questions were asked, there were like three or four different kind of questions asked. Right. And I don't know which one, if they built one. The one I remember the most was they asked me the first time I ever went to a college football game. And I remembered, I think the guy who was there doing it that day was amazed that I remembered the game. I remember the first college football game I went to at Keenan Stadium in Chapel Hill, where Carolina played the College of William and Mary, coached by Jim Root. I remember walking into Keenan Stadium, smelling hot dogs, the taste of the Coca-Cola, walking up the spiral at Keenan, stepping on the cups after the game to make the sound. Carolina won the game. William and Mary had like yellow helmets and white jerseys, and I just remembered everything about that first experience because I was so excited as a kid. I think I was 5 or 6 and went to my first game. And Carolina had those blue helmets with the oval NC and all that. And that's kind of – he said, do you remember your first college football experience? And I went on for like 3 minutes because I had that recollection of going to that game. And they asked me another thing about the best play I ever saw, and it was Carlos Dansby of Auburn making an interception, falling into the bench at the Georgia Dome in a Peach Bowl game against Carolina, John Bunning's first year. Carlos Dansby makes this unbelievable play where he bats a ball up in the air and somehow intercepted it. That was the most amazing thing I've seen.
Cool.
What'd you say?
I talked about going to both Death Valleys
the same day.
And when I was running the Clemson Radio Television Network back in the 80s, and I was also a consultant at LSU. Mm-hmm. Ironically, here we are.
Here we are.
And
you're going to be able to renew some ties.
Well, I had great times at LSU. I loved working there. And so I started in Clemson's Death Valley, the original, by the way.
Yeah.
And left in the third quarter. It was a noon kickoff against Virginia Tech. I left in the third quarter, drove to Greenville, caught a flight, flew down to Baton Rouge, and then rolled in for Texas A&M and LSU at Tiger Stadium. And so I did both games in both Death Valleys the same day.
Wow.
Fun time.
Yeah.
And here we are. Wouldn't you know it? Clemson LSU for the national championship.
Guess what we get to do? Spend an hour with Eric McClain coming up.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.